Good morning, love, or good afternoon.
Afternoon for me on the East Coast.
Beautiful. How are you?
I'm great. It's nice to finally talk to you.
I know for y'all who don't know, this is actually our first time meeting each other. But social media will have it be like that sometimes, but I'm super honored. I just want to start by saying that this series was not my idea really in the beginning. This was your idea to kind of have us go through a series of different, questions around the topic of Kemetic yoga and teaching Kemetic yoga and having it be a part of our community wellness experience. And so I'm really excited because we kind of worked together to create this and bring it to you all. So, do you want to just take a moment to introduce yourself to the people and let us know who you are?
So first I have to give honor and thanks to the ancestors. Today is actually my grandmother, and she's an ancestor. Her name is Alice. It would be her 83rd birthday. So I'm just sitting honored in a space today to have this be the launch of our Black Wellness series, but also to be grateful for the way that I look. That really just symbolizes a lot of the way that she looks. So I have to give thanks to my ancestors. But my name is Jonica, and I am a brand new Vasu. I instruct Kemetic yoga, and a part of my business practice, right? Wanting to be totally immersed in what we're doing, because as you'll see throughout the series, Kemetic yoga is a bit different. It's a niche that you don't typically hear about. What does it look like to find my tribe, right? What does it look like to be a successful business? Is to know who not your competition is, but who does a similar niche and how they've crafted themselves for positivity, for wellness, for engagement, for reaching people with authenticity and intentionality. So that brings me here. I've interviewed two other individuals who are absolutely phenomenal, and now I'm meeting with Angie, and I have questions, but I hope at the same time the questions resonate with you, whether you want to start a business, right? Whether you want to look into health and wellness. I think it's a little something here for everybody, and there's a lot of mentoring and coaching as well that I'm sure I'm going to get from Angie about her.
It
Do you
kind of
want
comes with the territory.
Holistic.
Honored to be here and to have these conversations. And when Jonica and I were chatting, I felt like a lot of the questions and things that she was bringing up were necessary to have a wider platform so that more people could benefit. Because I feel like I get so many questions about how do I know which is the right teacher training to choose, and how do I know, what style and all these different things. So I'm just really excited, especially for those of you who may be aspiring teachers. This is a great conversation for you. So, and like Jonica said, we're going to be going through different things and themes for each conversation. So there's going to be a lot here to take away. So with that said, I'm ready to jump in.
So for today's session, we have four questions. And if the audience, if you have a question, you want to piggyback on something, by all means, please do. Let's go ahead and get started. Question one. Yoga has so many meanings and perceptions, right? How would you describe yoga? Is it fitness? Is it wellness? And what would you consider to be the origins and/or benefits of yoga?
Great question. I think a couple of things come to mind. One is like the sort of open for interpretation, whatever you decide you want the experience to mean and be for you, and then what the origins and original founders, you could say, or originators, intended for the practice to be. So I think that there's two parts of it. So I'll say that, and I'll start with the origins. I think that in Indian yoga, as well as in Kemetic yoga, we see a heavy emphasis on the spirituality aspect of the practice. And so it really is about getting people connected to themselves. I always joke and laugh and say sometimes I'll be like, left hand down, right arm up, and people be like, wait, which one is which? And I think that we can be so disconnected from our physical body. And there's so much knowledge and wisdom that the physical body has to teach us and to inform us on that is relative to the emotions we're storing and how we're feeling, that is relative to our state of mind and how we think, what we think about ourselves, how we deal with the world. And all those things also are like wrapped up in spirit, you know, that there's a spirit, essence behind all of that and deeply in each one of us. And so it takes some sort of peeling off of layers to get to that and to really take intentional time to be in a space where you can actually connect with spirit. And so I think that the practice of yoga and its intention in connecting us to our body and our breath, bringing us into the present moment, starting to take observation of what's happening within, realizing the thoughts that are going through our mind, realizing and paying attention to how our body feels, what emotions are coming up, and really to develop a really strong relationship with our, and more intimate relationship with ourselves. And to get curious, you know, about what's underneath the surface. And so, and like, what are we and what do we mean beyond our titles, beyond our skin color, beyond our names, beyond, you know, what is a more, what is in that deeper essence of who we are and how can we connect to that? And I think that the origins of the practice of yoga, whether they be Indian or Kemetic, I think are really rooted in that ability to connect with self and to come into union, right? So we know that yoga in Indian and Sanskrit means union, to yoga, to unite. And a common term that is used to describe Kemetic yoga is smitawi, which means two lands. And so it's when we think about Kemet, we think about Upper and Lower Egypt, right? And the uniting of the upper and the lower self, the dense, more physical aspect, you know, what we see and feel right here. And then that spiritual and divine essence that we all have, you know, thinking about the root chakra and the crown chakra, you know, we live in that space in between. And so I think that yoga has just this beautiful, magical way of bringing those things together in what can be a really beautiful physical and spiritual experience. And so I think that that is where the intent is in the origins and in the, you know, like the original forms of yoga and their intent. I think that what we've seen though, through the commodification and westernization of yoga, that it's become more about the physical aspect, you know, getting abs, losing weight, getting strong, you know, doing headstands. I still can't nail a handstand or a headstand, and I really don't care. And I had to get to a point where it was like, I don't care about that. That's not important. What's important is how do I feel in this experience, right? If there's something that a handstand or a headstand or whatever is giving me that that I'm enjoying, that I'm benefiting from, fantastic. You know, if there's something that a crazy deep back bend is giving me that I need, I'll take it. But for me, it's more about what is the internal experience I'm having of the practice, and not so much what is the external outcome, how I want to look, you know, what I want the person next to me to think about when I'm in a class and I'm nailing this pose, right? It's not about that. And so I think that for some people, yoga has the perspective of fitness or exercise, because that's what people are going into it with. And that's what they want to get out of it, which you absolutely can. But I think that there's deeper layers if you want to dive deeper into it.
I love that. So divine. When you talk about this stripped down approach, right, when you show up to yoga, it's to grace in or to breathe in, to X posture, right? Because that really means something. There is meaning behind the spirit way that we approach yoga. Music or no music?
That's so funny. Ashtanga yogis would be like, hell no, no music. It's quiet. We in here meditating. I think whatever deepens your practice. There are times where I need silence. There are times where I need music to really get into my practice. And I think for the Black community, if I'm speaking frankly, absolutely music, and make it some shit that I know, right? Give me some R&B, give me some Janae Aiko, give me some Londrell, give me some Solange, give me something spiritual and soulful and uplifting so that I can really connect at a deeper level. And the reason that I say that is because music is in our blood, you know, all the way going back to those, you know, there's African diaspora, of course, but we know that all Black Americans originate from Africa, and there is so much of music and drum bass and rhythm that is part of like our existence, you know? And so I think that in that way, music can be so, get us into that place of transcendence where we can move away from maybe the distractions that are happening in our mind or like, you know, the challenges that we're experiencing in the pose. I've been in classes where the music has gotten me through a posture, you know, like, okay, I can just stay here a little bit more because I'm really feeling this beat right now. And so, you know, I think that it's whatever can deepen and not distract. And I think that everybody has to make that choice for themselves. But for Black folks, I think having music that resonates, especially for those who are new to the practice, can really allow them to get into it in a deeper way, you know? Yeah.
I totally agree. I'm hearing earlier when you said the thoughts and you have to get out of what's prohibiting you sometimes from even getting into a posture, right?
Right.
Because there are things that can do that. Hearing the music for a new person who is very unaware with connecting with body, or they've only connected with body through music, that might be a wonderful way to ease them in or to refocus their mind so that they can, you know, meditate on what's being said. And if it's super positive, like Londrell, you know, some of the poems that he turns with beautiful beats,
yes,
that can really uplift you. I am thinking that about myself today.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Because it's vibration, right? And what we're trying to do in a practice is uplift our vibration. And so if there's something we can add to the practice to help us, help to lift us up, because we're not always lifted, okay? We try, but we're not always in that lifted space. And so it's just an additional way to also indulge the senses. You know, I think about the touch, I think about the sight. What are you seeing when you're practicing? What are you hearing when you're practicing? What are you smelling? You know, a little, maybe a little incense or sage, you know, and really like fully immersing yourself. Maybe a little cup of tea, you know, while you're practicing or after, like really indulging all the senses into the experience for me, just really gets you like in it.
Time of day.
Do you expand on that question a little bit more?
Some people will say yoga in the morning. Mm. Some people may not have time because it is a spiritual practice, more so than say fitness for how we engage with it.
Mm-hmm.
If that I begin my day or I set my tone, set my intention with yoga, that I give first to myself as a creator, or am I opting into as long as I get it in?
I love this question. You know, I think, again, it really is about remembering that the practice is here to serve you and not the other way around. You are not here to serve the practice, right? The practice is here to serve you. And so I love what you said, though, about giving something to yourself first. Typically for me on a good day, which are many days in terms of how I wake up slow. Obviously, I'm an entrepreneur and I have the ability to have my own time schedule, but I think waking up slow and being able to give something to myself first, whether it's a quick meditation, reading a book, having a cup of tea, whatever it is that I'm taking a moment for myself first, I think is huge because it kind of sets the tone for the day. Being able to set an intention, a lot of times, as you know, as a teacher, we'll cue that the students set an intention for their practice. Being able to just take 5 minutes. And I think that this is one of the big things too, is like, you don't need to sit on your mat for an hour for it to be a successful, like you practice yoga. There are days when I do 1-2 moves for 5, 7, 10 minutes on my yoga mat in the morning. And I call that a practice, you know? So short as it may be, I dedicated some time to that, you know? And so, you know, removing any like, preconceived ideas of what it's supposed to be, I think is really important, and allowing yourself to give yourself something first. So I think in the morning is a wonderful time, you know, especially if you have kids and a family and there's a lot of people that are counting or depending on you, you got to make breakfast, you know, all those kind of things. I think taking the time to get up a little earlier and really giving something, filling up your own cup first, sets the tone, because then you're not walking around the day looking for somebody and being upset when somebody's not filling you up, right? Then it's just overflow at that point. And that's where we want to be. So But I also think that it's fantastic to find the time. If it works for you on your lunch break, lunch break. If it works for you in the evening before you go to bed and you love a night routine, go with the low-hanging fruit first. Go with the low-hanging fruit first and what feels easiest first. And then you can build a routine around that, or you can choose a different time when you feel like you've gained some momentum.
Absolutely, but just definitely get it in.
Mm-hmm.
Or becoming a Basu, what was your first yoga experience like?
Y'all gonna laugh. Y'all gonna laugh. I've told this before, so some people may know, but just to clear up, Basu, B-A-S-U, is a word that Jonica actually informed me on, which means comedic yoga teacher. Is that right?
Yeah.
Comedic yoga instructor, which I love that word. So my yoga journey, believe it or not, started in college. I did not want to take a regular like walk around the track four times in the PE class, you know? So I was like, let me take a yoga class. And I actually failed yoga in college my very first time. I failed. I had like a older white dude who was like hardcore, had gone to India and studied yoga and was like not playing no games. My, you know, CP time ass, showing up late to class, door would be locked, you know, all that jazz. So I wasn't really about it at that time. And then the second time I took it, I actually had a black yoga teacher, a black instructor at the college, and I passed that class. But I kind of lost interest in it. And it wasn't until, or I should say that at that time, it wasn't hitting for me the way that it hit for me later on. And when I was living abroad, I'm half Spanish, so I was born in Spain, and I went back abroad to live about 5 years ago. And I was just experiencing a lot of depression because, you know, there's still a lot of things that I don't identify with. Or when you go back to a place, there's still a culture shock. You know, you're still kind of like a new person going back, even though you're from there. So I had a difficult time, and I watched a documentary about Paramahansa Yogananda, which is a very famous yogi from the East, wrote a book called Autobiography of a Yogi. Y'all may be familiar with it. I've talked about it before, and I watched the documentary, and it kind of like triggered something in me and reminded me, you know, that there was a light at the end of the tunnel. Whatever it was, it gave me some sort of inspiration. And I started to move my body again. And if you've ever been depressed, movement is typically not something we associate with depression. There's a very sort of stagnant stillness, you know, and so to move my body again was already something. So I started practicing the little bit that I remembered from college, sun salutation. Yes, Basu, that's correct. And so I came back to the state shortly after, and I had taken a hot yoga class for the first time. I think this would be characterized as like my first real like, whoa, yoga experience. I had never done it in a group like that, you know, in a studio space. And I just remember having a moment, like a transcendental moment of bliss in that class. She had us in some crazy balancing pose. It might've been like a dancer or something. And I was just like, I had a moment of absolute surrender. I don't remember what she said, but it was something along the lines of like, basically like, if you fall, you fall, you know, like it's okay. You know, just be with whatever is there. And I was in that challenging pose, and I was just with it. And I just remember like, it was almost as if I could just, all I could experience and feel was this bliss, this like over encompassing sense of bliss. And very few times have I ever experienced something like that. And I left the class that day, and I was like, oh shit, okay, yoga is a little more than what I thought it was. And I remember just leaving that day thinking, okay, there's more to this than I thought. And I got really curious about the practice and more serious after that.
And what were the steps then? Well, actually, let me go back one question. Was hot yoga the first?
It was a vinyasa class, so a very traditional. It wasn't like a Bikram yoga or anything like that. It was just a vinyasa yoga class, which is a traditional style of, you know, of yoga, focused on one breath, one movement. So you're moving through the postures pretty quickly, and you're in a hot room. you're sweating, okay? You dripping sweat. And I love sweating. So I was, you know, in my element, but it was, you know, in a hot room with a, full of people in challenging poses, and you just in it, you know?
What about the experience with your teacher at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Helped move you through the point of depression into, I have more to give in me, and I want to learn so that I can share this experience. Because initially, that's why we move forward. I want to share this. Everybody needs to feel like this, right? What made that transition happen for you to go searching and seeking to an instructor yourself?
Yeah, I actually, you know, yoga is one of those things that in a sense kind of found me. I did fall ass backwards into a yoga teacher training shortly after that experience. So a friend of mine was working at the front desk of a studio and told me like, hey, they're doing a scholarship for yoga teachers. I was broke as hell at the time, like broke. I had to borrow money to even pay 50% of the scholarship, okay? And I had never been to the studio before. This was a new studio that I had not gone to before, but I got awarded the scholarship. And so I had no idea. I had not done research on what a teacher training was like. I had no idea what I was stepping into. And it ended up being one of the most transformational experiences of my life. At that time, I was being led by white women in a white-owned studio, in an entirely white group other than myself. So I don't think that at that time it had hit me as much how much we normalize as Black folks being the only, like how much that's just like, we just accept it, you know? And once I finished that teacher training, I knew that that was like my thing. You know, I have had jobs since I was 16. I'm the person who's been fired, quit a million times, had a million jobs. Like I get bored easy, you know, Aquarian all day. And so, but this was something different. This felt different. I knew it was different. And I felt like it was something that I did want to bring, you know, forward. I just wasn't sure how. And it took me about another year before I launched Afro Yoga and realized, and it happened a day when I was substituting teaching a class for Sacramento State University. They have a fitness campus on, they have like a fitness center on campus. And I was teaching a couple classes a week there. And I subbed a class and three Black women stayed after class. It was a full class. They stayed afterwards to talk to me and told me how important it was for them and how much it meant to them that I was at the front, that they had never seen that. And I didn't realize it. It had not hit me, you know? And at that point, it was like a fervor had hit me, like, okay, what can I do? I need to bring this to my community. How can I get it out there? Blah, 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 blah. And the minute that, you know, I launched Afro Yoga and I put a Facebook event out, you know, over 60 people of color came to the park that day. Kirsten's in here. She was there the very first day. She knows. And it was A1 from day one. And so it was an amazing experience because it was like a sea of melanin. It was unbelievable. And I had people who cried and came up to me and had never practiced yoga in a space full of other Black women and people of color. And I knew it and I felt it at that moment that this is a movement and this is gonna be as big as I imagined it to be, because I'm seeing it right here that it's not that we don't want to practice wellness or we don't want to be in the wellness space or in a yoga class or in a studio. It's that we haven't been invited. We haven't been genuinely invited. And invited by people who look like us and understand us and share our life experiences. And so I knew, you know, that like, okay, I have to be this person. You know, I want to be this person. I have a responsibility now that I've seen it. I have a responsibility now to show up and to be this person. And I happily took that on because it felt great to be that. And I just kept continuing to offer more and more experiences. I don't know if I actually answered your question.
You did indeed.
Okay.
And your storytelling, your path, your journey. I see spiritual through and through, the seeds being planted through each question. I get a little bit more and I'm just like, the story was just weaved perfectly.
Mm-hmm. I believe that one thing that's just been amazing to me is that this journey, although entrepreneurship is not easy and building a business is not easy, it has not been hard. And what I mean by that is that I've felt like I always knew it every single step of the journey, as if an elevated ancestor, spirit guide, somebody was always dropping game on me and telling me what to move, where to move next. I feel so innate in this role. I feel like this is where I belong, and I feel like I always know what to do next. And that has been unique to me building Afro Yoga. And I truly feel that spirit is working through me to create these experiences, to educate people on these things. And I have seen people actually tell me how much of their life has transformed by just being in a space full of Black women practicing yoga.
Energy, good energy.
Divine, great, beautiful, melanated energy. Yes.
And everything. I had another question.
Yeah.
So Afro Yoga, it sounds like, launched right after you finished your initial yoga training.
About a year after. Yep.
What prompted Afro Yoga as a name?
Divine inspiration. I was sitting in my kitchen nook, trying to figure out if I'm gonna do it in the park, what I'm gonna do, trying to like create some type of graphic, and the name just came to me. Boom. Afro Yoga. It literally just dropped on me. And I was like, oh. Like, as soon as I received it, I just, not that I saw the vision of everything it would be, but I felt the impact it would have. I just felt like it was gonna be big. And I just was like, oh shit. You know, when you get the chills and you just like, whoa, this is big. Like, this is gonna be big. That's how I felt. And that's the energy I moved with from day one, when I had less than 1,000 followers, when nobody knew me, when, you know, I was still new in the graphics game and barely had a website. And, you know, like I moved with the energy of supreme confidence because I felt it in that moment, what it was supposed to be. And when I went to the park that day and had that class, that's all I needed for confirmation. That was it. And then it was full steam ahead from there.
One follow-up then. So you are changing the lives of many people, I'm sure, not just people of color. As you do that, how do you fill your cup? And let me think, how do I word this? How do you fill your cup daily before you go give so much to someone? What does it mean to practice this niche to educate historically?
Okay. So I'll start with the historic education first, and then I'll go into like personal self-care. My body feels like it's tingling right now, just because.
Good question.
Great questions. I feel like what I know to be true is that a limited amount of our history is told to us, and a limited amount of our history is available. And so to have pioneers like your Serah Hotep, Dr. Assar Hapi, Babacar Khan from Senegal, show us the way and do the research and spend the time practicing. I'll never forget when I did my teacher training with your Sarah, how he said that he had been practicing yoga for 30 years before he started certifying anyone. And I was just like, the level of, to me, that just screams integrity. It screams like, I need to know this through and through before I teach anybody or show anybody else how to do this. And so to have the lineage of that type of integrity, of that level of research, and to just to be able to be investigative, like to know that it exists, to be, to even research it, right? Like, we can't even research it if we don't know what we're looking for, first and foremost. So to actually have a direction to go, and then to be able to explore that and expand on the learning and learn so much more about it. I mean, when I was creating like the Black Yoga course, which is now a 7-day challenge, I learned so much doing the research, you know, and I got re-excited and reignited to do to bring it out and to expose this information, because I've seen when I just even say comedic yoga, people are like, what is that? So many people don't even know still what it is. So then to add this rich history, and then to learn that people like Angela Davis and Rosa Parks used yoga and meditation, et cetera, as a means to combat racial stress and to energize themselves for the movement, that is incredibly empowering information. And I think that it shifts the relationship that we can have with wellness. It shifts our perspective of ourselves in wellness. And it opens up a world of possibilities that we didn't know existed or that we didn't think were available to us. And when we realize, like many of the things, that it actually starts with me, it started with me, it's in my bloodline, it's a whole different story than yoga's not for me, all I see is skinny white girls. It's a whole different, not only conversation, but internal experience. And so for me, speaking about the history is reminding people who they are and who they've always been, not educating them on something new. And that is reclamation. And there's just something so powerful about that. And I see the way that people respond to comedic yoga and how they feel it in their body and how it feels so different, because there's something about it that is connected, you know, with the ancestors, like you said in the beginning when you spoke on them. These postures are off of the walls of the hieroglyphs in Kemet, like literally, directly, the same exact posture. There's an experience in that just can't, you know, it's the ancient future. And so to be able to take, for the history part, to be able to take ancient wisdom and embody as a modern practice is like the epitome to me of honoring what came before you. It's like the epitome of legacy,
yeah.
Right? Honoring what came before you and continuing to carry the torch. And this is why I'm so passionate about bringing this information forward, because I think if we can just understand the connection that we have to it, then it can change our approach and change our mindset about it and understand that, hey, wellness has always been a part of the Black experience, right? It has always been an aspect of the Black experience. And unfortunately in this country, it has been a means for internal liberation and for respite, you know, not so much for leisure, unfortunately, and lifestyle as it may have been back in ancient Kemet. But Black America, this is about, I just need a space to breathe and let some shit go, right? And be in community with my people. So I'll say that about the history aspect. And then as funny as this may sound, like, I am recharged. Like, doing this is not work to me. This fills my cup. It reignites me. It makes me passionate. It makes me more energized to continue to do this work. So anytime I teach a yoga class, whether it's on Zoom or whether it's at a retreat, I feel energized by the people and their response to the practice and their response to the knowledge and the education, because I'm seeing in real time the transformation that people are going through, which is what my intention is, you know, is to help people transform and redefine what wellness is for them, redefine their experience with it and claim it and take it on as theirs and as their right to be well and know that their connection to it is inherent. So I get recharged, but I'm not always, you know, at 100. And so for me, I do usually take, unless there's something pressing and, you know, I have to get on something because there's a deadline and there's things that need to be done, which is not all the time. I take the first few hours of my day for myself. I love, you know, obviously practicing yoga, breathing, getting on my mat. Sometimes I do physical fitness type exercise, you know, get them squats in every now and then. meditation, reading, journaling, hopping in the sauna and sweating, you know, drinking some fresh juice or a smoothie or just a cup of green tea. Like those things to start the day like that, doing my skincare routine, whatever just makes me feel good. I just lean into that, you know, if I want to clean the space, if the space has gotten a little cluttered, I need to clean my space, you know, light some incense, fold the blankets, put the pillows, you know, those kind of things bring me peace, and make me feel light, you know? So I take on whatever practices, and there's several of them, music, you know, listening to music. On Sunday, I put on some Aretha and I was playing soul all morning, cleaning the house. And it just felt so good. You know, it just felt so good to me. And I was happy in there washing the dishes and cleaning up my space. And so I think that whatever can help you like turn a leaf, you know, that can help you dust off like the heaviness or dust off yesterday or dust off like whatever is just like really doesn't need to be there anymore. To engage with practices that facilitate the letting go and the releasing. And that can be breathing on a yoga mat, that can be in a visualization meditation, that can be literally just sipping a cup of tea, looking outside and being grateful. So I have my go-to practices that I know are medicinal for me. I try to eat good food that nourishes me. If I feel like pizza, I'm gonna eat a pizza. If that's what's calling to me, if I wanna, you know, whatever it is. So I just try to indulge myself daily in self-care practices that I know are fulfilling and enjoyable and like bring me peace, you know? Naps. If you know me, you know I love a nap. I'm half Spanish, okay? Siesta time is for real. We take a siesta around here, you feel me? So I love a nap. I have a comfortable bed. And I feel like there's one more thing that I wanted to share with you on this, but I can't think of it at the moment. Oh, I don't work myself to the bone. You know, in the beginning, I grinded out because I was building something. I had to lay a foundation and I had to go hard early in the game. And I think for new yoga teachers, especially now with how many there is, you do have to go hard. You know, you got to stake your claim and that takes effort and energy. So in the beginning, I mean, I was doing all kinds of stuff. And eventually I really figured out what my community needed from me, what I was really good at to give. And then I was able to have some signature things that I offered that felt like a good flow and felt like they responded to my community's needs. And then it's just a rinse and repeat and setting up systems. So one of the things that I'll say as far as self-care goes, which is something that you probably would never connect, is systems, automations, software that is supportive. You know, those things are, I can't tell you how helpful those things have been in just giving me space, giving me time. So, you know, I'm not sending out an email manually to let somebody know to sign up for class. I have a software that has a system that gets people registered and gives them the link, you know? So on the business end of things, for peace of mind, as you become more busy, you have to figure out systems that can actually work for you and save you time, because this hustle till you die shit ain't it, you know? And I spend many a days, I'll take a day off, you know, I'll take a month off of social media without a problem. And that's because I've built a loyal audience from all the energy that I've put in, all the work that I've put in. I've earned my right to rest. And not that you have to earn the right to rest, because we all deserve to rest. But like as a business owner, I have earned the right to rest by the work and the elbow grease and the blood, sweat, and tears that I put into the land. And I am reaping now my fruits. My trees are blooming. My land is blooming and I'm reaping. And I can look out on that and just chill for a minute, you know? And so that's been huge, is to figure out a way to have systems in place that can really support your rest and support the other things that you want to do, because stress ain't cute, you know? Stress ain't cute. Running around like a chicken with your head off ain't cute. Figuring out your method, your way, what works, and organizing yourself so that you actually have more time. And this requires discipline. And I'll go on this small tangent in that, especially as an Aquarian woman, you know, the sense of restriction, authority, you know, limitations is like the most off-putting thing that you could tell me. But I have realized that discipline, structure, you know, order has given me the most freedom. And now I can enjoy. I took a month off in Mexico in October. I'm planning to take time off in the summer to travel. And that is a result of, again, all the hard work that I put in, the systems, the people that are in place to support me, and really being able to live a life of ease because of everything I've done to set it up. So I hope that rounds it out.
It brought up one more question, and I know we're going to come back to business, more about business
later. Yeah.
But because you mentioned self-care and you talked about systems, mm-hmm. about investment into learning, right? Mm-hmm. So how does self-care extend to that part of your business? Like what I invest in, how I research, how I'm about, you know, other, you know, small Black businesses or other businesses that meet my values, my purpose, my goals, my alignment, and finding ways to also, you know, sew into them, right? Mm-hmm. As together and expand networking. Do you see that happening in terms of your self-care as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the biggest things that one can do for peace of mind is to have clarity. Mm-hmm. When you are clear, it makes everything easy. When you are clear and when you have a criteria, it makes everything easy. Mm-hmm. And so if I know what my objective is and what my goals are, I can make sure that all of the efforts that I put in are in alignment with that greater goal. I know immediately when a brand or someone I'm looking to work with or a collaboration, if it fits my criteria, if it aligns with my values and vision, or if it doesn't. It becomes a very easy yes and a very easy no. And one of the biggest things that I say is that after experiencing a pretty close to burnout is I say no to shit all of the time. I say no to like most things. I say yes only to the things that I know will A, benefit my community, because that is always who I'm thinking about first. B, align with my vision and values, and also benefit me as a business owner. Those three things have to be in alignment. They have to be in alignment. And if it's not, then it's really a hard pass. And I'm cool. Like I want to make sure I'm signaling to the universe to bring me the things that are in alignment. Sorry, Instagram was trying to give me a timeline. I had to. But yeah, so on that business end, I think having clarity, understanding what your goals are, and then making sure that you are, you know, reflecting and checking in, are the things that I'm putting my energy towards going to get me to this goal, right? And everything doesn't need to be about money and financial gain. You know, in the beginning, in the first, really the first 2 years of building Afro Yoga, my one and only intention really was to serve my community and to build my reputation, to get really great at my craft, to know how to create and craft amazing and excellent experiences, and to become the best that I could be at what I gave and to become known for what I did in my community. That was my one and only objective for like the first 1-2 years. I was clear. right? I was clear. I knew exactly what I was working towards. I knew exactly what I needed to do to get there. It was very easy for me to say yes and no to things. And so I hope that that answers the question, but like being clear is so important. And so whatever you need to do to pare down and to figure out what to get clear, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? And does it align with my higher vision and values? You know, is it of benefit to everybody involved? I never do anything unless everyone involved benefits. That's just how I operate. And so, being able to have clarity has been really helpful because it helped me, again, set up a criteria where I understood what was in alignment, what wasn't, and then it just made decisions really easy. The problem is we have decision fatigue. We get decision fatigue. We don't know what to do. We don't know what choices to make. And then we get tired. Now we can't even do the thing we was really going to do because we're tired from making the decisions to try to get there, right? But if we're clear and it's an easy yes or an easy no, now I have an abundance of energy to pour into the yes and the no because I'm very clear.
Oh my gosh. So inspired. I have learned so much today. Thank you. And not wait until next week. So this is just the beginning.
Absolutely. If you have some time, I would love to maybe go through some of the questions that are in here. I know we've got some stuff in the chat. Someone asked me, for yoga teachers just starting out, any advice for class prep or creating flows? That's a good one. I think for creating flows, just having a general idea of where you want to take people. So like when I was in Vinyasa teacher training, it was always about this peak position, like the most challenging pose in the whole segment. This is the one you have to get people to, right? So what do they need to do in their body in order to be the most open to get to this posture? And then how do we safely get them out of that and back into a relaxation after you've built them up? So I don't fully teach like that anymore because I don't really do a lot of Vinyasa. But I just have a general thought in my mind of some of the postures that I want to get them into. And then I actually am kind of a freestyle teacher. Back in the day, I did used to write my flows out more. And I think as a new teacher, it is a good practice because it helps you figure out which postures should go before which ones. You don't want to take somebody from standing up to laying down to in a back bend to in a forward fold, right? Like you want to do things that will feel good naturally in the body. The second tip I would give, and this is something that I will often do and that I did more in the early stages, is go through the flow in your own body first and see how it feels for you so that you can know how it's going to feel for the other person. And that is like an aspect of integrity too, right? Of like, I'm not going to, I want to teach somebody something and be able to speak to all the, what they're going to experience because I've gone through it myself. Mm-hmm. And like, that's just like, that is a part of the motto of the brand for Afro Yoga. Like what I learn, I teach, what I experience, I talk about. So going through it yourself is one of the best ways, I think, to teach a really powerful and effective, Flo, do you have thoughts on that?
Our system, my teacher is a little bit different. So I was under Netter Unk, and he was taught by Mawada and Karen Ashby. Mm. We have a more structured focus, and we focus a lot on the glutes, a lot on the legs, a lot on the strength, spine, posture. Mm. For strength as your main center. And we have five phases. So typically I can break up those phases. And if I want to make it up into a routine where it's more fitness based, because we do a lot of squats, we do a lot of legs, we do a lot of arms.
Mm.
I can extend it. I can go fast. I can go slow. But the system is pretty much there for us. Cause again, we want to follow the alignment. We start up and then we go and we start up. So our peak is kind of upside down from Vinyasa.
Okay.
But when we come back up, you know, we're staying up. So usually I will do a morning. I do a free morning, 20 minutes, just like a morning rejuvenation. But I just do that first posture because I get up early, but other people don't. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to prove that full. Warming up their body, but also at the same time, introducing them to somatic. I get a lot of first-timers doing just yoga in general. Mm-hmm. But that first posture and first phase is really good to like completely warm up the body.
Mm-hmm.
And then for people who want to do like other sessions or longer sessions, we can rock the whole thing out.
Nice. Yeah. Every style has its thing and every teacher has their way of delivering. So I think that over time you find your own style of and way of teaching. I know it took me a couple years really to find my voice and to find my way of teaching. And like, this is how I present my, right? It takes a while. And so,
The flow too has a really good, like as you're developing your flow, I think for me, and we'll talk about this later, but students don't know. So I think sometimes we go a little bit too far into it. They're there to be guided. They're there for the breath. They're there for the community. They're there for the kindredness. They're there for the chakras.
Yes.
So focusing too much on your flow, sometimes I think that's a point of place that gives us all clarity, right?
Yes.
And I just want to get it right. And then we don't do it because my flow is not right.
Mm-hmm.
You will practice better when you invite others in as a means to learn, ask for feedback and grow, but yeah. Don't feel like you're out there and be perfect.
I love that you said that. And I think that points to one other thing that I forgot to mention is that you have to read the room. Like, if I walk into a class and I'm planning on teaching a power flow and when I get in there, everybody's resting in like a child's pose, that's letting me know they are not, or they're really quiet and introspective. That's letting me know, man, that might not be what they need right now. So as a teacher, you have to meet the moment and you have to meet the student. And again, this can take time to be able to pivot like that, you know, on the drop of a dime, but it's something that will come as you develop. You have to teach yourself out of being new. There's no magic, like now I'm a fucking great teacher. It's, you have to teach yourself through all those things and it's not always gonna be perfect and you're gonna mess up. I have some horror stories, some teaching horror stories, you know, where it's like, ooh, that just went terrible. But I learned and I grew. And so, but I think one of the biggest things for me is always like, I wanna make sure that I am giving the people here not what I had in mind for them, but what they need. Yeah. And that's a big distinction. And we want to make sure as teachers that we're like, it's not an ego thing of like top down, I'm going to take you through this thing. It's like, I am a being of service to you. I am your servant in this space. The student dictates what the teacher does. And yes, you're there to provide knowledge, support, information, and guidance. But that should all be relative to what the people in front of you need. So I think that's really important as well. Let's see. How do you handle modifications for all the possible body types and prior injuries? Yeah. So one of the things that I do is I teach to the beginner. Like my language is to the beginner. And then I will offer more challenging postures as a secondary option, not as a primary option, to make sure that people don't feel, I want people to always walk away with a win. So I usually teach either in the middle or to the beginner, and then I add on. I don't start with the deep back bend. You know, if it sounds good to you, if it sounds like it's gonna feel good in your body, you can take the back bend. You know, if it doesn't feel good, you can change your mind and come back. You know, so giving, I think that empowering people with options is what modifications are all about. And you're not always going to nail it. You know, people have different shit going on in their bodies and we don't know. They don't always disclose. We can't always figure it out, but we can offer options and make sure that people understand that they are in power of choice. And that they can decide that ultimately it's their decision where they go with their practice and that they don't need to follow everything that you say. So I always try to make sure that I let people know like, hey, remember that I'm just here to give you some suggestions, right? And to give you some guidance. But ultimately, like, you are the ultimate authority over your body and you get to decide what feels good for you. So giving people some pointers like, this should feel like an opening, you know, but it shouldn't feel like painful or like any type of sharp pain. You should feel an opening, or maybe it'll feel challenging, but you shouldn't feel any type of sharp pain. Or like, you know, just things that they can do to make their bodies more comfortable in a posture are important things to offer, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I would go back to what you said about reading the room. And it's okay to ask. It's okay to start your practice out with an introduction and, you know, who's first time here, right? Mm-hmm. And I do instruct at the college, but asking those questions are essential. You want to make sure that you're able to meet whatever their objective is, whatever their needs are. If they have something to get out, that they can be open to a bit. And some people will come in and they'll automatically say, as soon as I get down on my knees, anything, oh, you know my knees. Now you want to tell me, you know, and it's like, well, can we breathe? Do you want to try? Can we breathe through it? Can we try? So when they disclose, it's a matter of, okay, let's slow it down. Let's breathe. Yes. Let's work on breathing, because when you breathe well, right, the inhale and the exhale opens up those joints to allow for movement to happen. And people will block their own movement. It could be amazing for you for a prior injury, but it also can be a little taxing, and we need to tell people, go at your own pace. So I agree 100% of that, but reading the room and speaking to your people is quite okay, and telling them to stop.
if they're going to hurt themselves, right? Like, hold on.
It's like, let me show this first to see if you want to go into it. And then when you show it, then you come back and you say, let's do it together. But you're instructing. And some people need that for their spiritual awareness. Yeah. They may be the person who just wants to go and do. Well, watch what I'm doing first before you do it wrong, because you thought you knew what was happening. But that, how you saw it on Instagram, that's not how you do it, you know? Or whoever you said, don't watch them no more, right?
Yes. I love what you said about education, because that's something that is critical for me and something I always do in the beginning of my classes. I don't assume that anybody in the room knows what yin yoga is, or knows what kinetic yoga is, or knows what vinyasa is. So for me, I like to educate and let them know what to expect, because it can remove some of the fear. And it validates them when they're going through the experience. They're like, oh yeah, she did say this. Oh, this is the one breath, one movement part. Or, oh, this is the, okay, this must be one of the postures from the hieroglyphs, right? So I think that it gives people something to reference to, and it makes them feel safer in the practice when you can break down like, hey, so here's what the practice is. This is what a bit of what the intention is. We're gonna be moving through some breaths. I'm gonna cue you through it. We're gonna go through it together. There'll be times where you might be in some poses that feel a little bit uncomfortable or challenging. I'll guide you through on how to breathe through those. But remember that you always have the choice to come out if something doesn't feel good. Like, just letting people know ahead of time, you know, like, here's what to expect. And like, I'm going to be here with you through it. Right. And like, at the end of the day, you still always have the power to choose what you want and what you don't want from this practice. So I love that you added that piece about the education, because I think that that is so important. And in so many yoga classes I would go to in studios, they would like give you some type of inspirational chat in the beginning, but they not necessarily like breaking things down. And I think that this is a big distinction from white yoga and white yoga spaces to Black yoga POC, you know, BIPOC spaces, is that there, so many of us are new, that as teachers of color, teaching to people of color, we have to take the extra step to break down those myths and to break down those preconceived notions of what the practice may or may not be, so that they feel it is truly accessible and available. And so as teachers of color, that's something that we have to pay special attention to. Okay, loves. Well, thank you so much. We're going to be talking more about business and all those kinds of things in the coming up sessions. Jonica, this has been beyond beautiful. The live will be saved as of right now also it will be uploaded to the podcast. So it'll be up and available for y'all to listen to on the podcast. If you are listening on the podcast, we thank you for tuning in. Jonica, I will see you for the next episode. Thank you so much. And thank you everyone who attended and showed love today. Appreciate you. Bye, y'all.